I'm Angelique Roche, and this is Marvel's Voices. My first intake of Marvel content, there was two different entryways. One of my favorite movies when I was a kid was Howard the Duck. He was cranky, he was surly, he was a duck that walked around. But I really would have to say I was obsessed with the X-Men cartoon. For me, seeing Gambit come to life with his Louisiana accent and Storm being this strong, powerful woman of color, and then Jubilee and her dope, like, outfit and the bright yellows and pinks. And I think that was the entry point for a lot of folks. And it was the entry point for Ronnie Chang. And it's so cool to me that this one cartoon crossed so many boundaries, international boundaries, language boundaries, geographic boundaries, race, gender, culture, that really gave kids this ability to see themselves as superheroes. And I love it. Honestly, I will tell you, the moment I walked into the creative space to talk to Ronnie Chang, it was nonstop laughter. Like, it wasn't just that it was him trying to be funny. It really was his personality. Like, it's just, he really has this way about him, whether it's his demeanor, whether it's his word usage. He's just funny in a very smart, very observant, very analytical way. And I think that's the same thing when you look at the work he's done with Ronnie Chang, international student. He really put his heart and soul into creating something that was new and unique and different, that showed a different aspect of what it meant to be an Asian person living in Australia who was going to school with a bunch of folks who are also international folks, and this blend of cultures, and really create this different image of what college could look like, but also this different image of what funny looks like. You feel like you're laughing with him, not at him. And I think that's a really unique thing to do, particularly when you live in a world as a person of color where jokes are based upon stereotypes. This is Ronnie Chang's story, and a lot of me laughing. A lot.
Sister, so I'm a lawyer.
Oh, there you go. I'm a lawyer too. So there you go.
Yeah, you not only are a lawyer, like, you went back and, like, got another graduate degree after you became a comedian.
I did two degrees at once.
Oh, you did both of them at once.
Yeah, in law in Australia as undergraduate.
Yeah, so it wasn't a big deal. You just did two at once.
Yeah, I just do two at once. You know. No, yeah, yeah, it's pretty. It's actually, it's honestly, it sounds more impressive than it is. Anyone could do. Anyone could do, like.
Wow. I have LLM, and I try to tell people, it's like, no. Nah.
Oh, you got a master's of law?
I did.
Oh, my wife has a master's of law.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So you have two lawyers in one family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How's that work out?
It's okay. Yeah, she passed the bar, the New York bar, on her first try, and I didn't. So, yeah, there's no.
No hard feelings?
No hard feelings at all.
Well, we're going to leave that over there.
Did you pass the bar?
I did. I passed the Louisiana bar, though, not the New York bar. Yeah, so it's a little bit different. It's actually more focused on, we have civil law, so it's actually a little bit more similar to international law systems.
Yeah, it's more codified and it makes more sense.
Much so.
Yeah, the common law, you know, the case law thing is like.
I knew
yeah.
you were smart. I didn't know how smart you were.
The question is, if you went as far as getting your master's of law and passing the bar, then, and you just went, no, you don't want to do it anymore?
I mean, I was like, I was an artist when I was young, and I decided that I wanted to write. Right. And so I went into politics. So I left that, worked on the Hill for a while.
I guess what I'm saying is that master's of law is quite a long way to go before deciding not to, you know, switch it up. But
one of the cool things that I know, so you decided once you were done with your undergraduate that you were going to go do comedy, though. How did that come about?
I couldn't get a job. It was the global financial crisis and people weren't hiring, and I wasn't a very good student, so I wasn't very competitive anyway. So, and comedy was going better for me than law, so I just kept doing it.
So then, why law?
Because I was 18 and I didn't know what, you know, I wanted money, and I thought law was a good way to make money.
I'm not going to lie. That's actually kind of what happened to me when I graduated.
Yeah, that's what happens to everybody.
I'm 20,
you watch too much Ally McBeal and you think that's what what working the law is like, and then you work in and you're like, oh, actually, it's not Ally McBeal at all.
This is not exactly what I want to do with my life.
It's not Ally McBeal. It's more like Ally McBeal reading a phone book is what it really feels like.
You know what? I've never heard that analogy, but it's actually,
yeah,
constitution law is pretty much like reading a phone book some days. Yeah. So your new show, well, it's virtually new.
Yeah, it's new in America. Yeah, it's been out in Australia for a year now, but it's new on Comedy Central, Ronny Chan International Student.
It's loosely based on your life?
Sure, yeah.
How loosely? Because I've watched all the episodes.
Yeah.
How loosely is it
based? We set up the premise and then we just try to make ourselves laugh is what happened in the end. So a lot of the core of each episode, a lot of the heart of each episode comes from a very real place. Mm-hmm. So, the way the unrequited love or the frustration with uni admin or even frustration with your own friendship groups, all that comes from a very real place.
So in the show, so that folks know, so your mom in the show is like this very, she's got very high expectations.
Sure. Yeah.
But she's also, it's also coming from a place of love, right?
Yeah. I think that's what's really not shown in that stereotype. Like people like to, people are very well aware of that tiger mom stereotype, which I think there's a grain of truth in that with how my mom was, but people don't see the other side of that coin. It's never depicted the other side, which is the love that is there. So that comes along with the kind of the pressure that they give you or the how demanding they are. It comes from a place of love usually. So I wanted to kind of show both sides of that coin. I hope I showed it in the show.
Oh, I think there was a moment. We're trying not to do too many spoilers, but there was a moment where I was like, "Oh, she really loves him. She really just." So, do you still get calls every day from mom?
Yeah, yeah, calls picked all the time. She's in Singapore right now, and we just talk on the phone. Yeah, FaceTime. That's how I talk with my mom on FaceTime because I haven't been in the same country as her since I was 18.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah. So
you moved out of Singapore at 18. Well, you moved out of Singapore when you went to Melbourne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And so is the rest of your family still in Singapore?
Yeah, yeah. My whole family's in Singapore. Yeah.
So siblings?
Siblings, yeah. My sister's in Australia, actually. Yeah.
So why Australia?
It's near to Singapore and it's a nice place. If you've been there, it's very high standard of living. Melbourne is voted the most livable city 6 times in a row now. It's a very cool place to live and work and study. Yeah. And my sister went there for med school, so it was very... It was very easy for me to go there and be with my sister.
So older sister.
Yeah. Older sister, yeah.
So you're the youngest?
Yeah, I'm the youngest.
The youngest generally ends up being the creative in the family.
Is that true?
I mean, I've had a lot of youngest siblings on the show.
Are you the youngest?
I am.
Oh, there you go. That's interesting.
That means we, I don't know.
Attention? I don't know what it is.
Ooh, that could be it. I don't know. I might actually admit to that. We entertain. Like, were you always an entertainer as a kid?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Would your mom say that?
No, I don't think everyone hated me. It was just so I don't know. Maybe that's where it came from.
So how did you get into comedy then?
I really don't know. I wish I knew. I saw it and I thought it was something I could try. So then I just went to do it.
So you just got up on stage night. You just decided and you just
there was a campus comedy competition and then I went to do it and I thought I could do stand-up comedy, so I went to give it a try, and then it worked out. So I don't know, yeah.
And then the rest is history.
Yeah. So you never know where the the path goes when where the opportunities lead you.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you did comedy on several continents. You've been in several different comedy festivals. You've been on TV shows.
Yeah, I'm okay. I did okay. I did okay in Australia. People showed up in Australia. Shout out Australia. Thanks for coming out. Yeah, I started doing comedy in Australia.
Melbourne. Yeah. Yeah.
So. I got pretty lucky. I was doing theaters quite early on. People were coming to watch me, so that was nice. I didn't get a lot of TV in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, I was more of a subversive act, I guess. Yeah, not very mainstream. I think, I don't know. It's hard for me to categorize myself.
So why write? Why did you tell your story?
Money, really. It was really for money and fame. That was the only reason?
Yeah,
that's the only reason I got out of bed, honestly, for money and fame. And not even a lot. You can just give me a little bit. I'll get out of bed. For $10, I'll get a bid for $10. The ABC in Australia, not to be confused with the ABC in America, the television network. Asked me to write a TV series. So I went to give it a try, and writing is it's hard, man. It's hard, and it's something you can only learn through experience. So we wrote the pilot, and then the pilot went pretty well, and then we wrote the whole series. And I learned a lot writing those 7 episodes. You know, it's just me and my co-creator, Declan Fay. We wrote the whole thing, essentially. Like every episode we wrote, I think we got better at doing it. So, I mean, if you're watching the series, I encourage you, like, keep watching it, because I think we got better as we went along. Yeah. You know, we established the world. We learned how to write for TV. I can't tell you how much I learned just by trying to write these 7 screenplays. You know, how to write an episode, the kind of energy it takes, the pace, story arcs, A and B stories, how to link them, you know, keeping things interesting. Yeah. And how to not overwrite
ideas. One of the things I loved about the show is that you find a way to make fun of tropes making fun of tropes.
Sure.
Like,
I hope
you
so,
actually,
yeah.
Like, you actually find a way. Like, how difficult is it for you to accurately represent, particularly when you're dealing with multiple cultures, folks, without overstepping, like, speaking of overwriting?
Yeah. I mean, because it's my own story, so I feel like I don't really have any wrong answers. And also, I feel like there's as much as tropey as television can be. In my case, I feel like no one's really talked about the subject matter which I'm talking about, which is basically this kind of cross-cultural TV show of, like, Asian people from Asia in Australia. Like, I don't think anyone's ever discussed that, and all the layers that come with it, you know. So in that sense, any trope that we did was immediately kind of flipped on its head.
Yeah.
Almost, in my opinion anyway, like, just by us being unconventional characters, you know, so Asians from Asia doing it kind of flipped the tropes. And also, I mean, I think we're well aware of, you know, what hacky TV looks like, and so we were keen to kind of avoid anything that was too you know, that felt too like unoriginal. So that helped kind of push us. Every time we wrote a story, we tried to make sure that it made us laugh and made us as jaded comics, like,
which is not an easy thing to do, to make jaded comics laugh.
No, it's not. I mean, we barely laugh at anything. We laugh like, we know. I can't remember the last time I even smiled at anything, honestly. Yeah. So
that sounds like a challenge.
Yeah. So we were trying to make ourselves laugh more than anything.
Being here now, like, you came over in 2015. You made your debut on The Late Late Show.
Yeah.
What was your conscious thought, like, when you came over to the United States? You obviously were selling out shows there. You're being invited to Montreal and really doing that. But why come over to the States?
You know, everything I loved about creating came out of America. So I just wanted to come over and do cool stuff. Like, it wasn't even about, honestly, I took a pay cut to come over here. Like, all my heroes, all my creative heroes, my comic heroes, my movie heroes, everyone came out of America. So I just wanted to come over here and make stuff with them, or at least try to make stuff with them, or make stuff at a level that I saw was coming out of America. Yeah.
So you've done stand-up, you've done sketch, you've done TV, you've done movies. Like, what's your favorite?
I like it all. I like it all. I really love doing stand-up. That's my primary profession.
It's your jam.
Yeah. Stand-up comedy was what got me everything else. So I love doing that. So I still do it every night in New York City. TV and acting is so different. It's such a different kind of expression, way of expressing yourself. You know, like, stand up is so immediate and visceral and, like, uncensored, and it's just crazy town and, you know, whatever's happening in the moment. And acting is a lot more. There's a lot more people involved, and you're trying to deliver on a specific vision that has to, like, you have to execute. Like, when you're doing live comedy, like, whatever happens, it's live comedy, you know, we all get it. But with television and movies, like, you have to execute on whatever that vision was, a very specific goal. So they're both very different muscles. Yeah.
So comedy is also very nuanced, right? Like,
sure.
Different people think different things are funny, cultural things, like, sure, there are gaps.
Yeah.
Has that been a challenge, or because you grew up in multiple places?
It's been a challenge. I mean, I started learning how to do comedy in Australia. So I'm very much a product of the Australian comedy scene. And then So it's not like I learned how to do comedy in Singapore. Like I learned how to do it in Australia. So I was very geared towards Australia already. And then when I moved to America, I had to like relearn how to do comedy. And I actually met up with John Oliver when I first moved here to ask him how to do how to be a non-American correspondent on The Daily Show.
Oh, wow.
And he told me it took him 2 years to relearn how to do comedy in America. And he was spot on to the day. To relearn how to do comedy here. Because he's a stand-up from the UK. He's a very experienced stand-up from the UK. But even he had an adjustment period. And basically, you want to be able to tell jokes, understanding your audience's actual perspective. And it's very easy to say that you know, but you don't really know until you've lived like them, you know? And like, so basically, if you're a headliner from another country and you come to America, you can kill for 5 minutes, you can kill for 15, you can probably kill for 45 minutes, an hour even, but you can only do it for, you play the outsider card, right? Like, I'm not from here, this is crazy, this is weird. And you can do that for about 6 to 9 months before I think audiences start to smell the bullshit of like, oh, you're from here. You know, you keep joking as though you're the outsider, but you've lived here long enough, you know better.
Yeah.
And so the trick is to... you can still joke about America as an outsider, but you have to be able to make jokes that accurately reflect the American experience and their perspective. And that takes some time to actually learn the nuances of. But when you do hit that, you can feel it hit. That's when how you get to the next level.
And you get in your groove.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're making fun of them, but you're making fun of people and they know you fully understand their perspective. You know, you're not just making fun of them from a very surface level. That's really the key, yeah.
So you're a big Marvel fan.
Yes,
I think
Marvel
that's actually putting it lightly, though.
I'm a huge Marvel fan, but I feel like coming into Marvel and saying that is almost like, you know, too cocky. Like, I feel like you guys are going to nail me with some obscure fact. Like
no some, trick questions.
Right. Some story element or some item that I don't know about. But
I'm
a big Marvel fan.
1967.
Yeah,
no,
here we
just
go.
Absolutely joking.
Yeah.
So how did in the midst of like all your travels and the different places you've lived, how did you get into Marvel?
Well, I think everyone got into Marvel for my generation, from the X-Men cartoon series, right? Iconic theme song.
Yes.
Great animation. Really cool storylines.
Yeah.
And that cartoon, like, it was kind of like the gateway drug. And then you started to explore more of that world. For me, that's how I got into it.
Wow.
And then, you know, you start learning about the different characters and wanting to... Because the cartoon only covers so much.
Yep.
And, you know, it eventually ended. And so you're like, oh, what happened to these characters? What happened to these stories? And then you slowly start exploring more and more of the world. And it's such... There's so many... That's one cool thing. I always loved it when they had the crossover, like... huge events. There's this thing that
impacts
everybody.
Everybody got into everybody else's world.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still really cool. I really love the team-ups. Like, when you get these, like, really cool team-ups and folks are, like, working together. Like, there's one part when I first got into Ms. Marvel where Wolverine is actually in one of the issues of Ms. Marvel. And I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's
seeing
a cool
Wolverine, somewhere else in the universe.
Yeah, yeah.
But is there, like, one particular character, like, after you had, you know, your X-Men experience that you really...
I mean, I really like them all. I liked everything. Like, Spider-Man was always really cool. They always found a way to keep it relevant. And what I like about Spider-Man is how he manages to get so much done with arguably a very limited... His power range is actually quite limited. I mean, he can shoot webs and he can
and
stick
swing.
On a wall.
He can stick on walls and he's got a suit.
Yeah, and that's kind of it. But he's fighting literally everybody, like aliens and like corporations and like criminal like organizations. I always thought that he was pretty cool. I always thought he was very resourceful. That was my favorite thing about Spider-Man, was how resourceful he was.
Yeah.
Like he did a lot with what he had. And it's so cheesy to get into Captain America because the name and the uniform and all that. But if you actually read the comic books, like, they really updated him, you know.
Yeah. Have you read the new one?
Yeah. When he got shot and then he came back and then when he died. And then I think, like, he was the same, but they put him into this really cynical world, which I really like, where he doesn't even... He seems so out of place because he knows how kind of corny he is himself, you know, like what a weird symbol he is in this really, like he feels he doesn't fit. He's very self-aware of that, which is what I liked about that.
I feel you need a little bit of corny in your life though. Like, yeah. There always needs to be a little bit of...
Sure. I mean, especially with Captain America, like, and also I always wonder why Captain America never got promoted. Like, why is he always just a captain? Like, why is he not
General America?
Yeah, well, he should be General America by now, but they just kept him at captain, which is, I think, a huge oversight.
All branding.
Yeah.
It's all branding.
It's all politics.
It's like, you know, we could give you 4 stars, yeah, but...
We could make you a general, but Captain America has a nice ring to it.
It does have a nice ring to it.
They could keep the captain... You could call him General Captain America. Like, as though, like, captain's his name, but it's not a rank.
All right, so we got a couple quick fire questions.
Please.
Hulk versus Thor.
Oh, love it. I got to go with Hulk every time because I feel like Hulk should be the most powerful being in the universe, and he often is depicted as that. I don't know if you saw Thanos, the recent Thanos series. Yep. It's literally, he's the only guy left at the end of the universe. It's him and Thanos and Hellrider for some reason.
I mean...
Yeah, so I got to go with Hulk on this one.
All right.
Yeah.
Metric versus Imperial.
Come on, Metric, for sure.
I just needed you to say
Imperial
it.
Is dumb as hell. What's the boiling point of water? Nobody knows in Fahrenheit because it doesn't make sense. It's an arbitrary number.
It is.
Yeah. How many feet are in a yard? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. We don't know what we're doing. We literally launched stuff into Mars and it crashed because we don't know Imperial. Metric, please.
All right, Spider-Man versus Venom.
Spider-Man, you gotta go Spider-Man.
Cable versus Deadpool. It's the last one.
Ooh. Oh, I like Cable.
I like Cable too. I think Cable has a sense of duty.
He can travel through time.
And he can. Yeah. And that changes a lot.
That's it. That's the end game. You're also, done. Apparently, if he didn't get the techno-organic virus that he's always bitching about, like he would be like the most powerful dude in the universe, right? Because who's that X-Man? X-Man is Cable without the virus, right?
I'm here with it.
All right, so X-Man is the son of Cyclops and Jean Grey. If he didn't get the virus, then the unlimited potential that he would have had.
But we got to keep things in check here at Marvel.
Yeah, that's why you clearly, give Cable clearly, the virus.
What other story would we have, right? Whatever story would we have.
Yeah.
All right, so what is your superpower?
My superpower?
Yes.
My superpower, oh man, he's very slow off my feet. Very bad at improv is my superpower.
All right. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Damn. I always like the Adam Sandler click, that freezing time one. Freezing time is cool, right?
Freezing time is actually really cool.
Yeah, freezing time is super useful. You can prepare for interviews.
You could do whatever you want at that point. Yeah, yeah. Just freeze it. It's like getting more time in your day. Freezing time.
Freezing time, yeah. Freezing time is great. As long as you also freeze relative, but then how would that work, right? You don't want to age in frozen time is what I'm saying.
Would actually kind of suck. Yeah. So you would actually have to have the superpower of eternal youth and the ability to freeze time. That's really complicated.
That's very greedy.
But can you be greedy with superpowers?
I think you can. Huh. I think you can.
We might have to agree to disagree on that.
Yeah. All right.
No, this was amazing. I'm really excited for folks to see Ronnie Chang, international student.
Thank you so much.
And congratulations.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. One of these days, I'll meet you again and we'll talk about how different the Australian legal system is.
Oh, right. You don't want to know about that.
I mean, I studied it at my LLM. I did an international law LLM. That was awesome. Thank you again to Ronnie Chang for coming into the studio and his very busy schedule. And thank you. Thank you for listening. This is almost a year that we've been at this, and Marvel's Voices is going strong. And I'm really excited because if you're listening to this and you're in New York right now, we are at New York Comic Con. And tomorrow, Friday, because this came out on a Thursday, we're going to be doing the first ever Marvel's Voices live stage event with Saladin Ahmed. Oh, and make sure you go and you watch Ronnie Chang, international student. It's streaming right now on the Comedy Central app. See you next time.